From the book of the Apocalypse of Blessed John the Apostle. In those days I looked and I heard around the throne and the living creatures and the elders the voice of many angels, numbering myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." And I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all therein saying, "To him who sits upon the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever." And the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshipped. Continuation of the Holy Gospel according to John. At that time Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel." Jesus answered him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You shall see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." The saving words of the gospel. One wonders if at some point the Lord with his apostles somewhere remote, whatever, one wonders if maybe at some point he didn't open up heaven and let them see angels descending and ascending. There was the transfiguration, of course, but that would be a tantamount to the transfiguration. So this must have something to do with what they will see, not in this earthly life, but later on. Anyway, it just occurs to me, you will see heaven opened. Well, when was that going to happen for Nathanael? Anyway, we are celebrating today a holy mass, a votive mass of the holy angels. And I will remind you of what we had on Sunday. We had the intro read on Sunday from Philippians, where Paul says that the name of Jesus, every knee must bend. And here we have, in the book of Revelation, exactly that same kind of thing happened. What is it that we have? We have every creature in heaven and earth and under earth and in the sea and all therein saying, and all glory and honor to the one who sits on the throne. So it's a beautiful bookend with the intro that we had on Sunday for the Feast of the Holy Name. And so we have in here, of course, the word creature, every creature in heaven and on earth. And we have the living creatures in the book of the Apocalypse, and many angels, myriads upon myriads and thousands of thousands. Now, you know, these days, we are used to thinking in larger numbers. We're used to thinking about, you know, billions here and billions there, right? Pretty soon you're talking about, you know, real numbers. Or in these days, trillions here and trillions there. Well, a trillion is a number that's almost unfathomable for a human being. And yet we talk about these things in kind of, you know, airy ways now. But there are bigger numbers too. And that we have posited, our minds have run out over our skis in thinking about huge numbers. But let's just pause and think about this. Great writers like Thomas Aquinas, building on the work of others, posited that there were as many angels as things that move. Now, you know, let's think about that for a little bit, because in the time of Thomas Aquinas, there weren't microscopes. So he hadn't had the experience that we all have, like I'm sure as kids in some elementary school class, of taking a drop of pond water or putting a piece of lettuce in water and letting it sit for a while, and then putting a drop under a microscope and seeing all these critters in it, very tiny critters. Well, those little tiny critters are made up of even smaller things, and those things are made up of even smaller things, and those things are made up of even smaller things. Today we have electron microscopes that can see very, very small things, and we have particle colliders and things like that that fragment atoms and pieces of atoms. We know about quarks and charms and nuons and all of these different things. And they're all moving things. They're all very tiny, aren't they? I mean, so tiny that we can't, we can't get our mind around the hugeness of certain numbers, we also can't get our mind around the tininess of the smallness, the infinitesimal smallness of these particles. And yet, Thomas Aquinas's principle still stands. But if in his day it was possible to posit that there was an angel for everything that moved in the cosmos, and you know, he's thinking about the stars and a leaf falling and an animal running there and a rock rolling down a hill and things like that. You know, he's thinking about things that he could see and not knowing about quarks. And yet, if we consider that there could be an angel for everything that moves, that just goes to show the magnificence of God. It helps them with every discovery that we have, intellectual discovery or scientific discovery, every one of them seems to redound to the glory of God. The number of angels that there might be is vast. Now, we can't, it's hard for us to quantify angels, because maybe everything that moves is a way to help us quantify angels, but even that, you know, outstrips our intelligence. But it just would go to show how God really does guide, direct, if he doesn't force us in assigning an angel to us in our lives, like he might assign an angel to a quark. He doesn't force us like he doesn't force the quark, but maybe they do guide these things, and maybe they do occasionally steer it, or maybe according to the will of God, according to the mind, the infinite mind of God, steering the quark. I mean, what does that mean in the great scheme of things? Steering us, for example, away from a traffic accident, or away from the edge of putting our foot wrong on a step so that we might fall, or something like that. The holy guardian angels, which are assigned to all of us, this magnificent team that he has of these invisible persons. Now, there are three different kinds of persons, just to get back to the notion of what an angel is. There are three different kinds of persons. There are uncreated persons, and that's, of course, the three persons of the Blessed Trinity. And then there are two kinds of created persons, thus making up the number of three. Uncreated and created, and in created there are two kinds. There are those who have bodies, like us, and those who do not have bodies. And those are angels. And the ones who do not have bodies, Thomas Aquinas, in talking about them in very philosophical language, talks about them as separated substances. They're separated from matter. We are not separated substances. We are our species is individuated in the matter that we have. And so that means that all of us belong to the human race. And there are characteristics in the human race that are consistent across the entire species. because we are all individuated. Our souls are individuated in matter in the same species. Now, it isn't that way with angels. Angels are not individuated in matter in a single species, which means that every single angel is its own species. You know, you think about this, a giraffe belongs to its species, and a frog belongs to its species, and human beings belong to our species, and they're all individuated in matter. Angels, every single angel is its own species. As different, this angel is as different from that angel as we are from giraffes. Get your mind around that. And then if Aquinas is right, and there is a species, there is an angel for every moving thing, right down to subatomic particles, think about how many species that might be. Well, we can't get our mind around that number. And yet we have in heaven the sight of the creatures and the voice of many angels, numbering myriads of myriads and thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain." It's good to think about the angels. We are surrounded in clouds of angels. And, of course, some of the angels fell. Because angels are not individuated in matter, they don't have senses like we do, seeing and touching and smelling, feeling, things like that. They don't do that. They don't have any bodies. They don't have any senses. So angels, which are pure soul, pure intellect, they just simply know things in the essence of the thing itself. And because they don't have bodies, and because they don't have senses and so forth, and they don't know things the way that we do, we have to compare things to each other in a process of dividing and composing. And also because we are individuated in matter, we have bodies and so forth, we also have appetites that will pull us now in one direction, now in another direction. Trying to figure out what is good, we can be pulled here, we can be pulled there, and especially according to the appetites and the desires and so forth that we have that are slightly disordered and difficult to control. And so we can be pulled here and there about what is good and what is not good. Angels don't work that way. Because we can be pulled here and we can be pulled there, we can change our minds about things. Not so with angels. Angels, once they know a thing and they make a determination about the thing, there's nothing more for them to learn about it. And so therefore they cannot change their minds. Angels, once they've made a decision, cannot change their minds. And so, through whatever test it was that God offered to the angels at the beginning of the cosmos, some of them determined to go with what God was showing, and some of them determined to go against what God was showing. What that was is a matter of speculation. We can talk about that another time. But by going against what God showed them, they made a determination to be against God. And that's a determination that is eternal. Angels can't change their minds. There is no reforming a fallen angel. Once they are that way, that's the way they are for eternity. It's baked in, as it were, never to change. In a sense, this teaches us something also about our own fate, our own destiny. Because one day our soul will separate from our body and we will no longer have the appetites and the concupiscences and things like that that drag us to change our minds. We will lose the ability to change our mind. And in that moment we will be very much like the angels, who can't change their mind and made a determination for or against God. And so Once our souls are separated from our body, we're not going to be able to change our mind anymore. That's it. So when we go for our judge, the just judge, at that point we will receive the justice that is necessary for him to give as a just judge, to confirm or to confirm us in the state that we're in, for him or against him. And that, of course, determines our eternal destiny of heaven or of separation from God for eternity. So the lesson of the angels also helps us to understand ourselves and the kind of experience that we will have with the separation of our soul from our body at death and our subsequent judgment and eternal destiny. So let's ask today the holy angels to protect us from the influence of any of the fallen angels that in malice desire us to be separated from God like they are. And let's ask in a special way our guardian angel assigned to us to not only protect us, but also to prompt us and to help us in doing all those things which are good and avoiding all those things which are evil. And also, by reflecting on them, let us think about our eternal destiny and seek all those remedies that we might need so that we are on the right path of choice for God instead of against him. And I think you know what I mean. Dominus obiscum, oremus. Stedit angelus juxta aram tempi habens tulibulum aureum in manu sua, et data so Dei incensa multa, et ascendit fumus aromatum in conspectu Dei. Orate fratres.